not only of our own players here, but also how the tennis world is going to look with the next generation coming through on the men's and the women's side, and those established players still hungry to win the big titles. Linda Pierce has been covering tennis for a long time, for The Age, of course, and also now freelancing, working for the International Tennis Federation at the Davis Cup on the weekend. I'm sure you've read Linda's great work right across the journey, and she's been good enough to join us. Linda, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brett.
Davis Cup on the weekend. What was your takeaway from it? I mean, it felt different, Linda, because it all seemed to go very, very quickly. I mean, Australia, obviously, the clear favourites, but best of three, condensed down to 2 days. As someone that's covered a lot of Davis Cup across the journey, what did you take away from it?
It definitely felt different. 3 hours and 48 minutes, just 8 sets of tennis for 4 rubbers. It just, I don't know, I think the gravitas was slightly missing with that best of five. I just felt condensed into 2 days as well. It just, look, I work for the ITF over there, so I have to be careful what I say. But, yeah, it didn't quite feel like Davis Cup until right at the very end when the Aussies did the old Gatorade bath on the court and when it ran amok a little bit. And you could sort of sense the great fondness they have and passion for Davis Cup. But, yeah, it didn't quite feel like it used to. You were there. You felt the same?
Yeah, I mean, I walked away thinking, and I had to say it as the court announcer, that we're not going to actually play any more ties until, well, not play any more form of Davis Cup until November, which just seems so odd, because normally once we got through this week, you'd head to a quarterfinal stage and a semi-final stage, whether that's home or abroad. So just the gap now to actually having some sort of Davis Cup tennis, and the fact that we may not see a home tie here until, what, maybe 2023. So it felt quite strange to have to actually think about that.
We could see one still next February. It depends on the draw, whether it's home or whether it's our turn to host or not. But it will be very, I mean, Leighton Hewitt said afterwards he's particularly scathing about the finals system and how no one knows how it's going to work. There's so much uncertainty around it all, uncertainty about which players will be available. It's kind of, it's all been just thrown up in the air. And even Jared Piquet, who's running it from Cosmos, says he's not sure if this is the right solution, but we're going to give it a go and see, which just seems to me a little bit kind of ad hoc, really, don't you think?
Yeah, no doubt. I think, Leighton certainly wasn't, backward and coming forward about his views. I think everyone in tennis in Australia has been very forward about it. Maybe the only man is Mark Woodford, who's obviously so close to the ITF and thinks that the rules and the change in format is a good thing. And I don't necessarily think that's won him a lot of popularity back here, but that's his role, obviously, with the ITF right now. But yeah, I can't see it working. I mean, nine of the nations who played in the qualifiers, Linda, across the weekend, nine of the countries didn't have their top line player playing.
Yes, and both of them were in Adelaide for Australia, obviously Alex de Minaur and Dame Zuma for Bosnia and Herzegovina. But Sasha Zverev played, but he said he's not playing at the end of the year. So I think Sam Groth tweeted, if the idea was to get more of the top players playing, then it didn't work on this first weekend. It's such early days. It's just really hard to know how it will end up working or not. But once you give up these dates in the calendar too, it's very hard to get them back.
Yep. Yeah, no doubt. But certainly from a positive, and we look at just the Australian team, and obviously a team that was very, very unified under Leighton. I mean, Alex de Minaur, we can't see dropping away. I mean, this young man, you feel like he's either going to just sort of keep his place this year as a 19 turning 20-year-old, certainly in that sort of 20 to 30 range. We're not expecting him right now to jump up into the top 10, but you can't see him falling away. Millman's the interesting one, whether his body can handle another big year on the tour, how much room for the improvement. Alexei Poprin, sky's the limit potentially. It seems like he's got such easy power out on court. John Peers, signs in the early part of the year that he could return to some really good doubles form after a tough year. And Jordan Thompson, a player that we all think, Linda, is capable, certainly have been better than 61 in the world, because he brings a lot of good facets. Whether he can just take that next step and add some key components to his game to make him a top 50 player.
Exactly, and he played a good doubles tie with rubber with John Peers. Peers was outstanding, I thought, on Saturday afternoon. There is a lot of depth in men's tennis in Australia, but you have to say, I said to Leighton afterwards, not too many countries are playing 2 19-year-olds in singles. I know Poprin played the dead rubber, but it was great to give him give him a bit of a taste of it so that if he is required, even at the end of the year in Madrid, then he knows what it's about. He's got the feeling for it. And but the young guys are so passionate about Davis Cup. It's still great to see. That's kind of the mystery, though, is what they'll be actually playing in and whether it will feel the same to them when it's such a changed format.
Linda, you've known Leighton Hewitt and you've dealt with him over a long period. I think for all of us,
Certainly. It's
interesting. I mean, he's a guy that probably to this day still polarises a lot of people. I mean, a lot of people I think can certainly acknowledge right now that he's doing a terrific job. And I've seen a lot of it close up myself in the last couple of years, what he's doing with young Alex and others to really try and create a culture. And then there's clearly people that just aren't on the side of Leighton Hewitt. I mean, we heard Bernard Tomic come out, and we've known the whole story with the Tomic Hewitt situation for a long time, the love-hate and everything that's gone on. Can I just get your own take on how you see his role as the Davis Cup captain and then the broader role that he has, because he seems to have a lot of power, as he would, being the person of stature that he is, but is it too much power and just the overall look of Australian men's tennis?
He does seem to have power way beyond his current title of Davis Cup captain. I think that's fair to say. I believe, and many people do, that, and we were talking about it at Melbourne Park during the AO, that there's a review underway. Tennis Australia aren't saying that's the case, but a lot of other people are, so it's all that's a bit of a mystery as well. But whether you can have someone of latest power as Davis Cup captain when there's only a couple of weeks of year of Davis Cup ties, or whether they're going to rejig the whole structure in the high-performance area, I don't know. I thought it was very interesting Wally Masur coming out on the 60 Minutes story right at the end there and saying Leighton reports to him and he reports to Craig and it's not up to Leighton who plays Davis Cup. And then Craig Tiley to make that statement on Saturday saying, well, basically, we are behind Leighton. There's a whole lot going on in there, Brett. Maybe you know more about it than I do.
Yeah, well, I know bits, but I think it's a tough one because, I mean, well, you and I have dealt with Tennis Australia and, look, you and I, we've both been employed by Tennis Australia and I wear two different hats and I go in there and my job is to do a professional job for them, but for the other 11 months of the year, we have to call it as we see it and talk about all the issues, good, bad and the ugly, in the sport. And I suppose the only thing that Tennis Australia maybe haven't quite been, Linda, is transparent enough to actually explain the setup and explain what they're actually trying to achieve. It seems it's a little bit hush-hush at times.
It is. I definitely think it is. I mean, I tried to even find out whether Nick Kyrgios had been available or not available for the tie, and that proved very difficult. So I do think there's definitely they go about things very quietly, and then they'll come out with big announcements about various things along the way. I think in the media, people would certainly like to have a better idea of what's going on more often, but that's the way it operates. And so we're sort of stuck trying to scrabble around the edges and find out what we can by other means quite often.
All that certainly to play out, but the Davis Cup, yeah, it certainly does look extremely different. Isla Tomljanović is a player that, I mean, just for the general sports fan listening in today, probably wouldn't know that much about. She obviously has made Australia home. She's now a citizen. She's a very, very capable tennis player. She lost a final in Thailand on the weekend, so she's 0-4 in WTA finals. If she could actually break through and win one, I mean, she's got the capability of certainly maybe being top 30, maybe potentially top 20, now that her body's a lot sounder. Tell us your own insights into Isla Tomljanović, who often has been referred to as the other half of Nick Kyrgios, but a very, very capable tennis player.
Well, she was a very promising junior player and made the transition reasonably easily to senior ranks and then, yes, got injured quite a lot, decided to throw her lot in with Australian tennis, notionally lives in Brisbane, but I don't think she spends an awful lot of time there, based in Florida most of the time and has worked very closely with Chris Evert. Certainly has a big game. She's very professional. She's very fit. She's very committed. I thought it was very unfortunate, the circumstances of her loss against Jastrzemska in Thailand on the weekend, yep, where there was a very controversial medical timeout called at 2-5 down by the eventual winner, which Nick, of course, was quick to jump out and say, this is trash. What did he call it? Trash. But even someone like John Millman, whose take on most things I tend to find myself agreeing with, did say that he's had medical timeouts for legitimate reasons in his career that he's taken, but he wouldn't mind seeing the whole thing done away with altogether and just play on, because if they're using it, if players are using it strategically and tactically, I don't think that's a good thing either.
Well, it's also breaks off court, isn't it? I mean, Sharapova got the boos of the crowd at the Australian Open after taking what a almost an 8-9 minute break at the, I think, end of the second set against Ash Barty in her match. And you know, there's no exact rule, is there, as to, you know, a clock saying, okay, well, you can only go off for 4 or 5 minutes, and that clock will count down. If you're not back, you get a penalty. It's sort of, you know, judges, well, what is reasonable time? But there seems, there's a few things in tennis like that that need to be tightened up, just from an entertainment product point of view.
I agree. That's why I enjoyed having the shot clock at the Australian Open too. So there is no doubt when a player is taking too much time between points. There's no doubt when they're taking too long to warm up before a match. I think that was a really good addition, for example, and there are other areas that could be more strictly enforced so that there is no grey area.
Linda, our Fed Cup girls head to the US this weekend. So great effort last year to get back into the world group, the top eight. So Barty, Gavrilova, Priscilla Hahn, Birrell and Sharma. We'll talk about the last three there. I mean, Priscilla Hahn has been around just a little longer, but nice sort of incremental build. Kim Birrell's had the big rankings leap, as has Ash Sharma, courtesy of winning those first-round matches at the Australian Open. Daria seems to be genuinely struggling at the moment, and Ash Barty's just going from strength to strength. How do you see that matchup against the United States? We've got Keys, Danielle Collins, the standout at the US Open, Sophia Kennan, good young player, and Melika, who won the Brisbane International Doubles.
Yes, well, I spoke to a few of the Aussie girls before they left, and their captain, Alicia Molik, and certainly the Americans have got a lot of depth when you think that they don't have Serena Williams and quite a few others in that lineup. But Danielle Collins was a standout, really, at the Australian Open, and she's a feisty competitor, isn't she? She'll give them all sorts of grief over there in Asheville. And Madison Keys didn't have a great summer, but you know, we know what she's capable of. So I think the Aussie girls, with Ash Barty now, they're number 14 in the world, and she's really, really loves playing for her country also. I think the Aussies have got a bit of a show over there. We'll just have to see how the young girls stand up and whether Dasha can find a little bit of form when she needs to if she's selected for the second singles.
Absolutely. Just to close, we've got a long tennis year ahead of us. When you look at the men's game and the women's game, just give us a quick take on just how you see the year evolving, because there's a lot of questions to be answered on both sides in terms of whether the big guns can keep getting it done at the top, new players emerging, new Grand Slam winners. What are you envisaging?
It almost seems like there's a big gun in men's tennis after watching Djokovic play those last couple of matches at the Australian Open. You'd have to think Rafa's still a good chance on the clay, but, gee, Djokovic was absolutely outstanding, almost sort of scary good, I think. So I think he's going to be definitely the dominant player in the men's game this year. And sadly, I don't see Roger winning another one, but I hope that I'm proved wrong. Among the women, it's so open, isn't it? I think we've now had, it's before Osaka went back-to-back, there'd been eight slam winners, different ones in succession. And I still think that we're going to see someone like an Osaka have a really good year, but it's much more open. I feel there are many contenders going into every slam, which is a great thing. And it'll be really interesting to see if Serena can get up to that 24th.
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. I'm not convinced she can get there now, but there's a lot to unfold. Linda, great to talk some tennis. We'll do it again soon.
Thanks, Brett. See